when we study the Dhamma or study what the Buddha taught or study what any spiritual teacher taught, what we're doing is basically amassing a whole bunch of ideas and concepts and ways of interpreting our experience, tools. Well, when we actually practice and as we develop our practice over time, what we learn is actually when we need these tools and when to let them go. And the Buddha used the analogy of the tools or what he taught as a kind of raft that was put together to cross a stream. But once you cross the stream, we're supposed to let it, the raft, go. It's made out of maybe found wood and other found items, and we fasten together from our spiritual tools a vehicle to get across the stream to the other side, to the place where there is less suffering. But once we get there, the idea is not to carry around all these concepts that we learn, but to in fact be able to put down these concepts, know when we need them, but know when to let them go. Sometimes people can become quite attached to the ideas that they learn in a spiritual environment or in their own research, in their own readings, and they can become quite bullying with their these spiritual tools. We can start lecturing our friends. Our family can avoid talking to us about anything because we go in on what the Buddha taught. But more so, what I'm going to talk about is actually there's a very prevalent wrong view, which is that there's this idea that the Buddha gave a ultimate transcendent view of reality, and that the rest of us were wandering around in a conventional, foggy view of reality. And that the goal of spiritual practice is to somehow see reality clearly, purely clearly. That somehow the whole goal of spiritual practice is to be able to experience the world in a profoundly clear way without any of our own stuff getting in the way. And that somehow when we've reached enlightenment, what that means in this incorrect view, that we've gotten to a place where we can truly experience reality without any of the self-centered I-ness or me or mine-ness getting in the way. So that the spiritual goal is, in other words, I want to be able to see the world clearly and everything that's going on. This is not what the Buddha taught. And there's a lot of really good reasons why he didn't teach this. But again, it's not about getting to a realm of pure, ultimate perception of reality. The Buddha, in fact, taught, and I'll go over this later, but taught a series of perceptions that caused less and less suffering. The goal is not finding the ultimate view of reality, because the Buddha was not interested in anything beyond our own experience. He didn't believe that there was this reality out there that could be experienced without any filtering by our mind, that we could somehow purely ever get to the world without our own stuff getting in the way. The idea, though, is that there are certain ways of perceiving the world that cause more suffering to ourselves and to other people. And there are ways of perceiving that don't cause as much suffering for ourselves. So it's gradually a process of replacing one perception of the world or of our experience, let's put it that way, with gradually less stressful perceptions. But it's not about ever getting to this place where we have this completely objective view of reality. Why is that? Why is that? Well, there's a couple of reasons. First of all, if you take it from just the Buddhist teachings, the first opening lines of the Dhammapada is the mind is the author of all things. Period. Everything we experience, everything we will ever know, is what's known as a sankhara, a fabrication, something that's put together by our mind. Now, this profound observation is actually borne out by all of the recent investigations, basically, by neuroscience, which shows that what we experience is actually not a clear representation of the world. It's actually something that's extremely fabricated. Rather than the world simply entering through our eyeballs and being projected on the screen in our head, which is what we like to believe, in fact, there's an entire part of the brain called the occipital lobe that's recreating the world from memories and expectations and ideas. And in fact, you're only seeing a very, very small percentage of what's going on at any time. It's actually less than 3%. The rest, 97% of the visual field is actually being put there in place by your memories and expectations. But it could be changing without you even aware of it. And there's some wonderful clinical tests that they've given where they demonstrate just how much of what we think we are actually seeing, we're not seeing. How much is in fact created by mental expectation. Then, of course, there's a lot of contemporary philosophers. You might have heard of Wittgenstein, who said that language in and of itself is extremely poorly equipped to ever convey any truthful depiction of the world itself. But let's also use a more practical, rather than sit here and teach you anything about Wittgenstein, which would be a bizarre way to spend an evening. Let's take a more practical experiment. Suppose you're standing on a street corner and you see an accident. A pedestrian has been hit by a van, and thankfully they're not killed, but they're slightly injured and they've been taken away to the hospital, and so a policeman who has arrived on the scene asks you what has happened. So you might simply say, well, that pedestrian was hit by that van. That would be one perception of the event. But then there might be more facts. For instance, was the light green for the pedestrian or was the light green for the van? So that's one additional fact. Another issue might be, did the van driver, in your experience, see the pedestrian and continue on? Or was he looking somewhere else and not seeing the pedestrian? Was it an act of intention or was it an accident? Or you might be asked, did the pedestrian run in front of the van? Was there no way the van driver could have known? Or on the other hand, did the van driver drive purposely recklessly? And then there's even more facts. You could go into the background of the van driver. Did the van driver live through some horrible genocide in Rwanda and come to this country? And was he undergoing a post-traumatic stress event, reliving the horrors of his past? When he was going through that event, did he go through the red light and hit the pedestrian? Or perhaps there was some kind of important event where the van driver could have saved untold lives if he got someplace. Or on the other hand, maybe you get the idea. We could go on and on and on, right? At what point do you say, I've understood what has happened? At no point. Because reality is so complex, filled with so much information, filled with so much background material, filled with so much volition, that the idea that you can ever get to a full grasp of it is actually an act of hubris, basically. For instance, in our experience, we might be rushing to get on a subway, and somebody has stood right in the doorway and blocked our experience. And the first thought in our head might be, oh, what an idiot, blocking the doorway to the subway. But how do we know that that person hasn't just worked 5 shifts in a row? Perhaps they have 4 children and they're barely able to feed them and they're worried about what's going on in their family. Perhaps they haven't slept that previous night. Perhaps there's somebody standing in front of that person that we can't see. We always assume that our immediate view of reality is all there is to know. But in fact, we're only getting a very, very small, small corner of the world at any glimpse, at any moment. That's all we're capable of taking in. In fact, there's a part of the brain that pre-digests everything we see and experience before we understand it intellectually and tells us where to look and what to focus on. That's actually called the limbic system. Some people refer to it as the lizard brain. It's not a lizard brain. It's actually essential to your survival. It's actually the seat of all your emotions. And it's preconscious. It gets a faster view of all the incoming information, and it tells you what to look at, and it tells you to disregard everything else, and it allows the parts of the mind to create everything else from expectation. The only thing you're actually seeing is what your quote-unquote lizard brain is telling you to look at. So, in fact, we're seeing an extremely filtered, extremely subjective, extremely fabricated view of the world at any given time. We're not getting the whole picture. So this is not a march towards a clearer view of reality. What the Buddha was talking about is actually the quest for enlightenment doesn't start from the question, how can I see the world clearly? It starts from the question, what can I do that will make me suffer less? We're not basing our spiritual goals and paths on what's known as empirical truth claims or the idea that I know what's going on better than that person. I'm right and you're wrong. What we're basing our spiritual practice on is how can I come up with a way of perceiving my experience that causes me and the people around me less suffering. That's the question. That's the focus of this inquiry. If you look at the very end of the path, the very final transcendent path in its long run, something that I don't hold out much hope for myself. I like to be somebody who is on the lay practitioner's path, and I practice a great deal, but I don't foresee lasting enlightenment, the fourth jhana, for myself. But from my studies in it, I can tell you it goes something like this. The idea is a monk who has left the lay life and has gone out into the wilderness, he's put behind him all of the concerns and the ways of perceiving the world in his day-to-day life, and he's instead replaced it with a less stressful perception of life, which is the life of a renunciate. Now, when we're in our day-to-day lives, we live in very stressful perceptions. Very often it's, what do people think about me at work? What do my friends think about me? What does my mother think about me? What does my significant other think about me? What's going to happen to me in the future? Do I have enough money? Et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. These are very stressful ways of perceiving the world. On the other hand, a renunciate has dropped all of those perceptions, and simply he's perceiving it in terms of, I'm out in the wilderness with some other monks, and I'm sitting here, and I'm getting my food donated, so I don't have to worry about money, and I don't have to worry about what other people think about me, because I don't have a job. So he's in a less stressful set of perceptions. But then the Buddha said, well, wait a second. He's out in the wilderness. That's kind of fucked up and scary, right? I mean, there's fucking scary shit out there, especially when, like, you know, there's snakes. Somebody was telling me that her husband, after he moved up north, he came from the deep south, whenever he'd go out in their garden, would be all terrified because he was so used to snakes being everywhere. So he brought that perception with him up to the north, where there's very rather few poisonous snakes in most people's backyards. So replacing the wilderness, then the monk would go on to simply experiencing the breath and the inside of his body, and he'd let go of focusing so much on the world around him. And then after a while, he let go of focusing on the breath as being the be-all and end-all, and he focused more on the lack of any meaningful beginning and ending of his body and everything that's around him. He'd understand that everything that he's experiencing is happening in his own mind, and he'd view everything as just an experience of arising and passing. The final place of enlightenment, the Buddha said, happens in this realm that he called neither perception nor non-perception, where we're not even focused on constructing the world around us, nor are we pushing the world away from us. We're simply existing, aware of everything that's arising and passing, and noticing how we're causing any suffering for ourselves. But it's not anymore, once you're at that transcendent realm, it's not about reaching this place of, oh, I can see reality perfectly clear now. It's actually a realm of non-perception, where there isn't a hunting after things in the world, nor is there an ignoring of the world. It's simply existing and seeing how we're causing ourselves stress and suffering. Now, this is the very end of the path, and I don't think you have to worry about it, but it just shows that at all points along the spiritual path, it's not about how can I get a clear glimpse of reality. It's actually about focusing on how we cause ourselves stress. What actions are we taking? What thoughts are we thinking that are causing ourselves suffering? So one of the key concepts that comes out of this is summarized by that old phrase, would you rather be right or would you rather be happy? There's a great teaching by a couple of teachings by the monk Ajahn Brahm. One of his teachings is about the couple, and I've told this a couple of times, but it's one of my favorites, where the husband is walking with the wife, and they hear a barking sound, and the wife says, oh, what a nice sounding duck. And at that point, the husband can either say, well, my lovely wife, that's actually a dog. But yes, a very nice sounding dog. Now, if the wife says no, that is a duck, and you hear another bark, the husband can, at this point, he's at a fork in the road. He can either choose to be happy and say, what difference does it make to himself, and let go of the empirical truth claim, I know that's a fucking dog. And he can let it go. He can be wind up in long-term happiness by saying, if you want that to be a duck, fine. It doesn't matter. What you experience the world as being is what you need it to experience right now. We get so caught up in everybody experiencing the world the way we do, coming up with the same interpretations of reality, it can be very frustrating. I have a friend, the only argument that I've gotten with one of my friends in the last 6 months, I have a friend who's a big music fan, like I am. And we send each other YouTube clips of music that we like. And I send him a clip of a song that I really like. And by a group, Neutral Milk Hotel. I don't know if any of you ever heard of it. And he sent me a note back saying, oh, this is crap. And I was incensed. I was incensed. And it took me, like, we had like a brief flare-up of emails. And then I realized, oh my God, I've chosen, you know, there I was, oh, this is one of the top 10 albums of critics' choices, blah, 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 trying to appeal to reality to back my case. But there is no way to demonstrate that any piece of music is better, really, intrinsically, than any other piece of music. It's all a matter of subjective experience. And I actually sent him a note of apology. We were totally tight. We hang out all the time, and we laughed about it. But it was important to realize, you know, no matter how long we practice this path, we can still get caught up in I'm right and you're wrong. I know what's best in this situation. I know what's the truest view of reality. I know what really happened. I know what's really going on here at work. I know what's really going on here in this conversation with my mother. I know what... We have this desire to be the one who knows the truth. We really want to be the one who's got the closer, more accurate view of reality. And that attachment, that fixation to believing that our experience of reality, the Buddha is showing here, actually causes stress and suffering. It doesn't, in fact, bring us any closer to the goal, which is ending our own suffering. There comes part of right view, the Buddha taught, is letting go of all views. Is knowing when to let go. Sure, you can say, well, I think that blah, blah, blah is a great record, or blah, blah, blah is a great book, or such and such is a better politician than such and such. But at the end of the day, when it comes to the spiritual part of our lives, which is trying to end our own suffering, our own stress, the most salient issue is knowing when to let go, knowing when to let other beings have their own opinions, and knowing when to disattach from our own. This is important. This is very important. Now, I'm not saying that reality doesn't exist. Of course it does. Of course there's been many horrible events in the world that are undeniable. There's been genocides. There's been extremely criminal events in the world. Michael Jackson is dead. There is such a thing as reality, but in fact, if you live in a complete dream where you have no ability to perceive reality, you're probably going to suffer. But the idea of being the clearest view of reality, being that, it means that is the thing that's going to bring you happiness, is not the case. In fact, the Buddha said there's three things we should be asking ourselves before we think or say anything. Not only is it true, but is it useful to ending stress and suffering? And is it harmful? Sometimes things are true that in fact bring more suffering. For example, I'm going to be the bearer of bad news for you all. In about 5 or 6 or 4 billion years, I don't know. But the sun's going to nova. Kablooey. It's all going to come to a complete end. Right? Sure, maybe the science fiction buffs say, but we'll be all on the planet Epsilon Gamelon by then, so it won't matter. Assuming we're not. Right? Assuming that the sun does nova, everything will be gone. Right? That's true. That's a true thought. Is that a useful thought? No, it's not a fucking useful thought. Most of the fucking time, if you walk around thinking that, you're going to become despondent, depressed, and you're not even going to focus on a goddamn thing you're doing. And somebody's going to say, why the fuck did you just step on my toe? And you're going to say, because in 5 billion years, it's all going to fucking end. So who gives a shit, right? So that's not a useful thought. It's true, but it's not useful. There are many, many thoughts that we hold on to that may be true, but they're not helpful. For example, the famous case of where the woman came to the Buddha with her dead child, and she asked the Buddha to bring the child back to life. And the Buddha sent her off in search of a mustard seed from a family that didn't experience death. And of course, she couldn't find such a family because every family she went to had experienced a death of some kind. So nobody could give her that mustard seed. Now, what the Buddha was doing here is he wasn't saying that her perception of her child being dead was incorrect. He at no point was saying it's wrong or that there's anything, you know, that of course your child is one of a kind, that it's not going to come back. But what he was doing was replacing that perception with a perception that caused her less suffering that was also true, which was that everybody experiences death. Everybody experiences loss. There's nothing personal about it. And in fact, in the rest of the Buddha's teachings, he said when anything happens to us, before taking it personally, ask or remind ourselves, isn't this happening to millions of other people? Don't view our experience as something that happens to us alone. Remind ourselves that everything we experience is part of being a human being. That's why he taught the First Noble Truth, where he says, shit happens. There is suffering in life. There is death in life. There is loss in life. There's not getting what we want in life. He's not saying that that's all that's happened, but he's saying that if we shift to that perception, that's the first step in actually suffering less, believe it or not. The next step is reminding ourselves, oh, there's a cause to a lot of my own suffering, which is that I tend to crave life to be different than it is. I tend to think, oh, there's a way to escape all this. I can be the exception to the rule. And that causes us more suffering instead than less. So again, the spiritual path is about ending our own stress, and it's about doing it by finding ways of perceiving our experience that causes less stress. But the fixation we have that the way we are experiencing the world should be truer than anyone else's is something that we can begin to let go of. Because at the end of the day, if other people get caught up in, for instance, you might have a friend who believes that happiness is totally the result of getting more money. Right? That's where they are at this point in their life. And your attempt to say, but my view of happiness is truer, is only going to cause you a lot of stress. Because chances are they're not going to, on their own, until the time is right, let go of their own perception of the world. So we need to let go of this fixation on having the ultimate view of reality, and start thinking more in terms of, yes, my perceptions are all filtered by my mind. I'm the author of my own experience. What can I do by changing my thoughts, by changing my own actions, to bring myself less suffering and longer lasting happiness? So that's tonight's talk, and I hope you guys have some insights to bring or questions or... just anything else you'd like to share with the group. Thanks for listening.